What's good? What's good? We are back. Another Live from Vietnam episode. And I'm so excited to bring on this next guest. I know we say special, we have special guests here, but this is truly an honor to interview our next guest. For real hip hop heads, you're definitely going to know our next guest off of the line. From the east, my brother to the east, my brother to the east. Let's bring on the one and only Brother Jay of X-Clan.
Peace and blessings.
Brother Jay, man, how you doing, man?
What's good, my lord? Everything is good on my end, man. Indeed.
Yeah, you definitely got one of the most recognizable, I think, lines in hip-hop, man, with the to the east, my brother to the east, my brother to the east. Anybody that knows real hip-hop definitely know that.
Yes man, that's the direction we should be looking at, man, no doubt.
So I want to get into some standard questions at first, like how did X-Clan form?
X-Clan is a deep story. Black Watch was really our foundation. Brother Professor X Lumumba Carson formed a organization called the Black Watch. And this was a young movement. It was meant for the youth, the eldest children, you know, children of the generation before us, who wanted to be within the Black nationalist principles, you know, improving our communities. Most of us come from the hearts of Brooklyn, majority, you know, okay. Black population. So we want to defend our neighborhoods from different things that were happening, and also to secure clubs. We were doing security at clubs that were having problems with hip hop, all the fighting and violence and stuff. So we started there. And then while I was on, you know, security posts or whatever, we would secure nightclubs at times, and I would go in and bust lyrics at the end of the night or something like that. And they recognized my talent. And Brother Architect took us up to get some demos and stuff done at Ultra Magnetic's crib in the Bronx. And then I submitted it to Scratch Me Productions at the time. That was Professor X's company at the time. He was Lumumba Carson at the time. We named the Professor X when we formed X-Clan. And after the demos and stuff, they got us a single deal with Island Records. And X-Clan was born as a messenger group for the Black Watch movement.
And you pretty much answered my second question, too, because I was going to ask you what the process was. So the process was basically you rhyming while you were doing security and then submitting those demos.
Well, you know, after the security detail is done, you know, when we first secure in the house, there's no, you know, to jump on stage. I wasn't a MC like that. But my brother Shaft was just pushing to the brothers that I had talent because we used to DJ together. And, you know, my rhyme style was kind of private back then. It was more like spoken word for me, you know.
Okay.
And then once Shaft had told him, like, yo, man, you got to get, you know, Brother Man in the studio. And, you know, the rest was history, man. You know, I was making beats and putting the lyrics together, just using the components around me, you know. Writing Professor X's parts until he got into rhythm of what it was. And Shaft always had the scratches and the breaks for me to choose different things that I needed. And Architect was always like a manager situation for us, like a co-management with what PX was doing with us. So, you know, their juice is what got us the deal. The fact that Architect was in Latin Quarters dealing with hip hop heads, both executives and artists. And then Lumumba also for, God bless him, Lumumba also for, you know, for knowing people in the industry. Once we had a demo that was of worth, the people kind of saw that what our theme was, you know, we weren't out here for what everybody else was out here for. You know, we didn't have the ego so much attached to our music, it was purpose.
Definitely a lot of purpose in the music. Now, what was the expectations of your first album, To the East, Blackwards? And what was the reaction when it peaked number 11 on the top R&B and hip hop Billboard charts?
Well, all of that was surprise. we basically just wanted to get the message of improvement. You know, we're studying for Marcus Garvey at this time, the Red, Black, and Green liberation. So we just wanted a platform to speak our side of things. You know, we were doing a lot of demonstrations in the streets at that time, you know, for what people would see now as Trayvon Martins and different things that happen in today's, in this era. But, you know, that was our thing all the time, to just be present and to protect our elders and the women and children when we were out there. So the label getting hip to us doing music, because we were known in the newspapers and, you know, and through the streets of New York, you know, as that kind of guardian. And once we had music attached, it was a wrap. You know what I'm saying? Everything, you know, it was basically a bullhorn for us, hip hop. That's what the dream of Brother Lumumba Carson was, you know, to connect hip hop and revolution in one, because he believed in hip hop as a strong platform, and look where it is now. You know, so back then in the 90s, he believed that meshing the two was powerful. And as a young man who had to, I believed in that as well. And that made me a unique artist, you know, because I had purpose. I wasn't rhyming about my shoes and my clothes and my hats and my girl and my car and all that kind of stuff. It was, you know, incorporating some of the studies into the music.
So it sounds like you really didn't care about going for the Billboard success. It just pretty much happened.
Yeah, man, because we were in a machine. And the fact that we were so, you know what I'm saying? So when you're in a machine, you have heavier marketing. If we were just independent, then we would just be a New York artist. So the fact that we had a strong platform and then a unique, you know, a unique theme, the Billboards took to it, because we were rocking popular music. I was rocking breaks, you know, Knee Deep and Billy Squire, Big Beat and Lou Courtney, you know, tracks I was sampling and stuff. So I was into breaks, into digging in the crates all the time. So I just sampled what I liked, you know, and layered it and took it to the lab. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't studying music like that. The most music study I had was DJing, you know what I'm saying? You know, DJing is not as respected as if you play a violin or, you know, or a drum set or whatever case may be. But, you know, there is music lessons in that. You know, you go through so much vinyl and different music, just searching for sweet spots to add on. That increases your music knowledge tremendously, you know. So I offered that to the audience, and I offered my lyricism. You know, I had to upgrade from what I was doing with spoken word and now get more into the rhythm of things. And, you know, I don't have a problem with that. You know, DJing opens the doors to many things. You know that? You know?
Definitely. Now, how did y'all end up on a German-British label, the Polydor Records, for your second album?
Well, it really was an upgrade, because you think about Island Records back then, Polydor, 4th and Broadway. There were a few other labels under that wing. They basically were like a tower of labels. So our upgrade from 4th and Broadway to Polydor was a big thing, because there were never rap groups on Polydor. You know what I'm saying? So that gave us access to a whole lot of music. Our label mate was James Brown at the time. God bless him.
Wow.
You know, yeah, for Polydor, look at where his music was, his catalog is. So his catalog was on Polydor. So, you know, so that was supposed to be a big move for us. But, you know, during the Exodus, man, we were really burnt out from the success of X-Clan, and then, you know, just doing all of the rallies and things like that. You know, racism was heavy in the early 90s, man. So, you know, we were everywhere speaking and doing different things, man. So we were really kind of burnt out at that time. You know, that could have been the beginning of us having like a Death Row platform, you know what I'm saying, for the Black Watch.
And how were y'all able to like repeat the success from the first album to the second? I mean, because y'all charted exactly number 11 on the second.
Yeah, like I said, the machine at work. You know what I'm saying? If you have a partner with the machine, they're pushing your music to be, as you know, number one. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So you know, they're hitting the charts and the PRs are doing their thing and whatnot. So, you know, I'm just glad the people loved what we were doing. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. You know, we always questioned the charts back in the days. You know, a lot of people bought themselves on the charts. But when we moved around, you know, we felt the love. You know, we were selling out arenas in different places, man. Like, you know, everywhere we went to, there was love for X-Clan and what we represented. So, you know, the charts were just a reflection of that, from the people's like to just having different kind of material on the market. You know what I'm saying? Like my first album, I didn't have hooks on every song. I just was rhyming and I knew how to create, you know, different bridges and harmonies and different things of that nature to you know, for you to make it think like you're doing something with a repetitious hook. You know, you think about R&B at that time frame, it's just like you're repeating four bars 100 times, you know, over a track. And I didn't really believe in that. I wasn't really with the hook thing. I think the most hook I did at that time on the first album was like Grand Verbalizer or something, you know. But Heed the Word, Funk and Lesson, two of our biggest songs, there are no hooks on those. Those are like bridges and breaks that allow people to dance and do their thing and whatnot. So I think that was part of the success and why we were able to go to a label like Polygram, because we found a new formula, you know what I'm saying, of just expressing ourselves and not disturbing the groove on the dance floor. Everybody was dancing. If they weren't spinning on cardboard, they was dancing in the clubs. You know what I'm saying? And how do you get a message so serious, you know what I'm saying, out to the people? And, it, you know, just because we're a Black nationalist group at that time, you know, it's not so much as you got to speak about the downside of everything. You know, there's greatness in Blackness. You know what I'm saying? And that's what we wanted to express. And it's not a separatist thing. It's just that our people were as they are right now. There's a serious delusion, you know what I'm saying, about, you know, who we are. You know what I'm saying? You know, you don't recognize your greatness. You sell yourselves out and, you know, you put yourself in slave mentality. We wanted to inspire people to think more of themselves and then step to the table of humanity with your head up, instead of always coming in with your head down and your hand out. So, you know, that was our message of improvement, you know, for Black people.
I had a couple affiliates I wanted to ask you about. Isis, aka Lin Q, like, how does she end up becoming an affiliate, and why Z?
We were recruiting when we were in the Blackwash movement, and now that the music side of it had jumped off, we were looking for messengers, you know what I'm saying? Not the next Brother Jay or whatever case may be, but we wanted to find different elements of young heads that were talking positive. And YZ is Muslim, so and very creative at that time. He was one of the only artists at that time, like partnership on a label instead of being signed to something. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, so, I didn't know that.
Yeah, 720 Records, I think it was, back then. He was the first dude to sign Mos Def and Wise Intelligent back in the days. You know what I'm saying? So
I didn't know he had signed Mos Def.
Mos and Wise and I think Adolf Aguilar. Yeah, he was into that kind of grimy hip hop, and this is like early, you know, early Mos. I think when they were owning that bookstore in the Bush, you know what I'm saying, in Flatbush, and before, you know, Black Star was formed or whatever case may be, you know, they were out there doing their thing. So he had a good eye for talent. So, you know, again, the uniqueness of Blackwash and what we were talking about was attractive. So PX had went on a trip and came back and introduced us to YZ. I'd seen one of his videos, I think Tower with the Power or something was out. And PX walks in with him. So he was like I guess like how Tupac came to Death Row. That's how YZ came to Blackwash. And then before him, Lin Q was doing a lot of house music at that time. If you listen to her albums,
there's
a lot of up-tempo dance music. So she was heavily into dance and things of that level, you know, the thick shoes with the, you know, the heavy soles and whatnot from back then. Like, she had like a punk rock house type of feel. And
wow.
You know, yeah, when you know the one thing, you come into the movement, bro, you sacrifice something. So whatever your ego trail was in hip hop or music or whatever, you kind of put that on the shelf and embrace another side of yourself. So those two that you're speaking of, they sacrifice whatever a YZ would have been as an MC, and then Lin Q, whatever she would have been in the dance and, you know, hip hop market. They lent their lyrical prowess to what we were doing. So that was honorable. And that's what the messenger is, even with me. You know what I'm saying? I would have been a Brooklyn MC, like a Kane or something like that. You know what I'm saying? And I would have had a little guard math on my situation, but not as strong as a purpose, as a movement. So I sacrificed the ego of my rhyming and went further deeper into, you know, the whole, you know, the rabbit hole, so to speak, and, you know, came up with the style of Funkin' Lesson, you know.
Now, I saw this on the Wikipedia. You know, sometimes Wikipedia gets stuff wrong, so I don't know if it's true, but it says you and Inspector Deck got the same first and last name.
Yeah, I found that out through a BMI situation. Is funny.
Okay.
As hell. But yeah, for this same exact title and this and whatnot, man. So yeah, that was a deep situation, man. Good brother Deck, man.
That's my guy. I love him on Woo.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm looking into having him on the X-Clan anniversary project. I just made a request to get a feature from him.
Now, why would you say is the main reason we started hearing like less and less conscious hip hop and mainstream hip hop to the point, I mean, you typically only hear it in the underground nowadays?
Well, you know, conscious music is complicated, man. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
There's a lot of things to be said. When you're dealing with simple pop music, such as the commercial market, it's very easy to say, like we spoke earlier about R&B, repeating the same four bars 100 times in the song.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, labels got tired of it being so complicated. You know what I'm saying? Because you got somebody writing 16 bars, 32 bars on a song versus what an R&B artist gets paid. You know, there can be a debate of publishing. Like, I'm damn near writing a book every album. You know what I'm saying? So that can be an issue as far as bottling, you know, so much, you know, quotes and references and things of that level. And then there's a lot of troublemaking and stuff, you know, when you're submitting information. You could be insulting different races and stuff, just stating your piece. So, you know, if I'm a gangster, I'm just talking about, you know, gangster rap at that time was just killing our own. You know, I'm on the street, I smoked him, I smoked this girl, whatever ways may be. Okay, as long as you're killing your own, that's easy to bottle. We're just writing a little Scarface movie on wax. You know, that's easier to advertise drama rather than empowerment. You know what I'm saying? In my opinion. You know what I'm saying?
Because I'm glad you brought up the gangster rap part, because Just Ice said that when I viewed him, he never called himself a gangster rapper. He said the labels put that label on him.
Correct. You know, he's a 5% guard. So, you know, he wouldn't walk around with the gangster shit. But, you know, it means the edge in the neighborhood. It means you got the edge. You got the sharpness. And I don't know how that, you know, how we got that. Thug is a negative, terminology. You know what I'm saying? Why do we wear it with pride? You know what I'm saying? That was the one thing Tupac, God bless, we had harsh discussions on that, because when he was first starting that thing, and I was like, you know, I don't get the thug thing. You know what I'm saying? We soldiers in the movement. He's a Panther Cub and whatnot. So I'm like, why would you go thug before putting the movement that you were raised in forward first? But you think about it, you know, bringing Black Panther to commercial world, that's not going to work. You know what I'm saying? It wouldn't have worked. people don't want to see you doing anything empowered like that. We were lucky in that area, but it limited our success in areas. You can't take people who know what time it is and put them on platforms. You know, they're unpredictable. You know what I'm saying? You look at how Kanye and them were, you know what I'm saying? When they, you know, knowledge of self starts opening up and you'd be like, yo, man, I got 3 million people listening to me. And he would call out George Bush. He would call out Jewish people. He would call out this and that. You know what I'm saying? So it's too random. You know, when now self hits you and you got the platform, dog, anything can come off. But if you got pop acts that love the ego and swim in it and play the game that they want them to play, you know, they'll follow a script. And we learn that every day now. Look at all the scripts that are being exposed. You know, manufactured artists popping out of the blue, that they're following instructions. So you look at a Cardi B or whatever case may be, you say, why she shot up to the top? Because she followed instructions. She didn't have no rules of honor and no, I'm not going to show my breasts. No, I'm not going to show my ass. I'm sure these are questions that they probably asked Lauryn Hill and Latifah's and all kind of cats. Like, show a little bit more chest and show that you're a woman. And they probably had to refuse. Like, no, I don't want my ass out. I'm not going to drop it to the floor when I'm on stage. You know, I have talent. You know what I'm saying? And not to diss, you know, Cardi B or whatever, like she's not talented, but you're not on a level of a Lauryn Hill.
Definitely not.
On no
and,
level.
And you're right. Like 90% of the female rappers literally have to sexualize themselves. Unless you're like a Rhapsody and maybe other, but 90% of them nowadays have to. In days it was more diversity with that. You had, you know, your gangster female rappers, your conscious female rappers, your sexual female rappers, just straight lyrical backpack female rappers, you know.
Yeah, man.
So my next question is kind of what you were talking about. Now, do you think labels ever really cared about conscious hip hop or Afrocentric hip hop? Or did they just care about making money off of the popularity of it?
No, I believe that the A&Rs believed in just good presentation of lyricism.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? I don't think it was so much as a conscious verse, whatever. I think they believed in solid lyricism and they didn't want fluff. So if I sit here and say, Doodoo Brown, that's not real lyricism. You're just doing chants.
Yeah.
So you take somebody like a Kane or, you know, one of the Wu or something like that, who's digging in a little bit more scientifically, you know, I think A&Rs believed in that, you know, Raucous Records at the time, even that Fourth and Broadway, that was Freestyle Fellowship, X-Clan, RZA and GZA before Wu-Tang.
Okay.
Who else is on that label? I think Shinehead was there. Shinehead is dope as an artist, both hip hop, reggae. And who else is on that brand? Rakim was there before he went to Ubiquity Records, I think it was at that time frame. So you imagine if that label had jumped off, you know, lyric wise, and we were all young in the math then, but you know, we were still holding it down. We would have been an all-star label if that situation had really gelled right, but everybody was just in battle like musical chairs looking for their spot. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't oversaturated like the game is now. So it's like the pro league. Like, either you want to rap in the park or you want to rap on these stages and get with one of these machines. You know, so it was a blessed position back then. So I do think the A&Rs did support that. But I think the problem that the higher execs have is, how do we bottle this? How do we shop this? You know what I'm saying? On a pop level. You can't go to an arena and bust down, you know, the lyrical philosophy and break it down. You imagine somebody memorizing Killer Priest, Heavy Mental. You know, that's not something that you sing like you can sing like, you know, a great book or something like Annie Up or some shit like that. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I think conscious artists at that time frame needed more music training, you know, to learn how to put bridges on songs. And you got to learn how to make people's favorite song before you get your ego off to get your, yo, you nice, your pat on the back. You got to learn how to make some favorite song. And I don't think we had enough artist development. You know what I'm saying? Like if 4th and Broadway had like a little Motown where you can have like little danger rooms for cats to practice and do different experiment with different styles, I think some of those artists would have been monster. You know, and some of them did move on to become, you know, icon. Look what we're talking about, Rakim and Wu-Tang and, you know, X-Clan and whatnot. We made our marks, but I think that we could have done more in the vein of running our own brands. Like, if I moved up to Polydor and then we're successful and I have music training, then I'm ready for a wing at that point. You know, like how Guru was with the Jasmine Taz thing or whatever. He had his own lane. So I think that was the goal for them to say, let them go scout and find out who's the next Gang Stars, who's the next X-Clan. But, you know, we weren't absorbing that. You know, we was enjoying the success and, you know, this next tier of wealth and whatnot. You move around, the country for free. Everybody's giving you everything. So, you know, everybody is, you know, in a different light. We're not thinking like, damn, I got to lock down, go ahead and learn how to play an instrument, learn how to, you know, get my band together, improve my show, you know, things like that. We weren't thinking in that vein. And I think that's one of the reasons that conscious music failed, because we felt so elitist. We were so elitist at the time, like, oh, I don't want to touch our styles. But then somebody comes out with, you know, a corny ass song and win, go gold and platinum. Why? Because everybody can sing it. So, you know, we lost, you know, and, you know, to ourselves. It's not a blaming of the industry. I just can't stand when people say, well, the labels are the devil and such, no, they don't want a headache. And if you come in there already thinking like my bars are future ahead and, you know, your artists are nothing, you come in like that, nobody wants a non-team player like that. So, because we're already against the system, so you can imagine how we feel about being in a machine and having to follow those kind of rules. You know what I'm saying? So with X-Clan, we didn't have to experience that. I mean, we ruffled feathers with the label here and there, but it was never something that was beyond reason, you know, or reasoning. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, because we're men of order. So, you know, there was always a place where, okay, we can do this and we can settle for this and we'll take these runs. A lot of times we clashed because they didn't do community radio. They gave you all pop radio stations. And then there's community radio stations that were giving us love, that were giving us connection to the people. So we would rip the itinerary up and add 10, you know, 10 community radio stations and whatnot and show up, you know, while we're in town and not just do the phone call thing or whatever. So, you know, that was important. You know, you got to do things for the people while you out. You can't go out there. I was at Hot 97 and then you didn't stop by, you know, Teddy Ted or Special K or something, you know, and, you know, like the underground markets that we're talking about, you know, you got to go touch the people. Tropical drink.
Me and my team whenever we link up, they're gonna be drink up. We sit down and relax and have few glasses when there's things to think about. Like I'm nice with the boss when I tend to the bars and I'm not talking drink pops. So tell the bartender that's tending the bar to please pass me a big cup of. And tell that waitress is waiting on us to put a little ice in it. Now watch the ice become weightless like the spaceships that I be sitting in. No waiting, listen, no, they're waiting for that tropical twist that'll kick in your taste buds. Now taste up, yo, I insist it's the drizzle.
What's good? What's good? I am back. Yours truly, one and only Paul Masson, and this is live from Vietnam. So last week, we were interviewing the legend himself, Brother Jay from X-Clan. In the middle of the interview, we had a power outage through the whole block for like an hour or something. So he decided he'd come back on and let us finish up our questioning. So let's bring on the one and only Brother Jay from X-Clan again.
Peace and blessings, brother.
That was deep, man. Yeah, last week, man, I was so upset. I was like, damn, right in the middle of the question you was answering, we had a power outage and it was out for like a whole hour. I couldn't even email or nothing, man.
Wow, brother. Yeah, we was trying to reach you, man, make sure everything was cool. I thought it was on my side, but I know when we didn't connect, I didn't assume a power outage, but I know something deep had happened, man.
Yeah. So I got about just a few more questions I wanted to touch basis on. I know I asked you about the Dark Sun Riders and the album, but I don't know much about the members. Like, could you tell us anything about some of the members of that group?
Well, Dark Sun was a project that I did in the gray area of X-Clan, as I call it.
Okay.
It was between the last Exodus project and then me going to Suburban Noise in the 2000s to bring the Klan from the West. So Dark Sun Riders was like a production project. And I had Brother Ra Hanna with me, who was the groove tweaker at the time. Brother Mate, master of all things electronic. He was our engineer, one of our producers. And then Sugar Shaft, God bless. He had taken on a new persona as well. Still the rhythm provider for the house. But, you know, we were just exploring the production side of ourselves because we really didn't get a chance to do that because of all the revolutionary work we were doing, community service, and then touring at the same time during X-Clan. We never had a chance to really hone in on the music, catch up to new equipment that was coming out, you know, just take the time out to kind of polish what we give the people more so, you know.
Now, when Professor X passed away, were y'all guys working on a new album?
Yes, I was working on Return from Mecca, as a matter of fact. And I'd asked him to come and do the protection because that's a sacred thing when we do the protected by Red, Black, and Green. That's sacred to us. But I didn't need him for the lyrics and such because, you know, things had evolved by that time. You know what I'm saying? And I just, you know, I was trying to start something fresh. X-Clan was originally a group with just me and Sugar Shaft. So.
Okay.
You know, I invited Architect and Brother Professor X to join us because they were instrumental in us getting on board. But now that we understood business and things of that nature, I was really to move on. I wanted to help him more with the structure of the movement. And he really wanted music. And music, you know, it wasn't his thing. It was just something that he loved, you know, as a consumer. But he was not a musician type of person and whatnot. So I really wanted what I knew him for. And I gravitated toward him, and which was the movement. I wanted to improve that and help him to bring it into this new digital era. Because at that time, it was like, it wasn't even Facebook and Instagram and all of that kind of thing. It was like, you know, LinkedIn was probably starting up and MySpace and all of that kind of thing was happening. So we would have had an opportunity to build something just around revolutionary thought. You know, that would have been a good way to extend Black Watch. But, you know, he wasn't interested in that. And we fought a little bit, but we came to a peace. And then when he passed, you know, at least we had peace with each other. You know what I'm saying? So, and that's as real as I can make it from what Dark Sun was. Dark Sun, right before that, was basically me getting producers together and then training messengers. You know, that was the original purpose of X-Clan and Black Watch back in that time, was to create our own wing. And Island Records would have given it to us, but the gear shifted in the game. You know what I'm saying? It was no longer about poetical expression. It was about gimmick. You know what I'm saying? That started years ago, 30-some years ago. It's not something that's new. They look at these manufactured artists. That's something that's been existing. So we were against that. And we wanted more of the pure artistry that was coming, not only from the neighborhoods, but just worldwide. We were traveling, you know. So now, Dark Sun was that.
Why'd you decide to change the album name from Return from Mecca? Oh, you changed it, Return from Mecca. Originally, it was the Trinity, I think.
Yeah, because it was going to be the third X-Clan project.
Okay.
So it was kind of bringing things home, but Return from Mecca was a better thing for me because I had refined myself and I was proud of what, you know, X-Clan could be now. So I extended the members of the group Brother Kumu, ACL, Fat Jack. You know, these are brothers in their own legend. You know, X-Clan is not just made of musicians and producers. You know, these are martial artists, you know,
okay,
many for many years, you know, engineers, you know, just men from different walks of life, men and women from different walks of life, you know, because there's a movement aspect to what we have, but it's not as public as what Black Watch is. You know what I'm saying? That was something that my brother had started, and I didn't wish to continue it because I thought it was tainted, you know what I'm saying, from that time, because of the just the changing of people's attitude. It was a people's movement. Mm-hmm. And everyone was in a party and bullshit kind of mood.
Yeah. You know
what I'm saying? So it kind of deflated what our efforts was. We talk about improving and refining ourselves. Even Dark Sun was me coming sober with, you know, the alcohol and the road time and all of that stuff. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, the road brings that to you. Everything is basically free.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, just cleaning myself of that and refining that kind of house for to invite people to refine themselves was a pleasure for me. So coming to the new X-Clan, I thought Return from Mecca was a better title than the Trinity. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because I had refined myself and I felt like I'm coming back to, you know, what it is with a clear mind and clear spirit balanced as my art.
Yeah, and you're right about that road life, because I actually got into celebrity bookings back in the MySpace days. And every time I get a writer agreement for somebody, alcohol was always included, man.
Yeah, bro. It's just, and when you're on the road, you know, it's not like a vice.
Yeah.
It's just that it's available.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
And it's legal and available. And
yeah, it's just taking advantage of it. Yeah, basically. Correct. It's there for free, so why not throw it on there?
Correct. You know what I'm saying? So it wasn't, you know, in my house, you know, I wasn't allowed to walk around like a slosh and a drunk.
Yeah.
But it was just something that had to come off me, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm helping people to get rid of different elements in their life, if it be their improving their health or coming off of drugs and all of that. And here I am sipping this alcohol and tripping or whatever, because I'm a celebrity. I just wanted to come up off of it. You know what I'm saying? So I had to learn my creativity in that. And that's why Dark Sun kind of sounds different from other projects and whatnot, because I had to come off sampling too. Sampling had cost me. So I had to learn how to make beats now or get with producers that were trying to make beats without the sample influence. And it's difficult because that's how hip hop was. We were borrowing from the generations before us and just flipping it up to our generation. So to be a musician, it needs training. So Dark Sun was really premature to me. You know, Dark Sun would have probably sounded more like how Mecca was. You know what I'm saying? Where I have the Damian Marleys and the different people in my journey. You know what I'm saying? And the music that matches my journey. So the producers on Mecca were phenomenal, man. I had a lot of good people on that project.
Well, my next question was going to be, what was it like working with Damian Marley, Bob Marley's son?
It was very interesting, man, because the label I was on, Suburban Noise, and big up to Cottonmouth Kings, I signed to a independent label that had a lot of pull. You know, I started learning the circuit. You know what I'm saying? You know that circuit with ICP and Tech N9ne? You know, that's a very good circuit. That's like 50 cities probably or more. You know, I was like, I didn't know this much, you know, showcase existed in the country till I started touring with them. So you know, the owner, Zinger, he had a lot of pull, and he loved Damian Marley. I think Jamrock had dropped at that time.
Yeah.
And Charlie Tuna, Jurassic 5.
Jurassic 5, yeah.
Their manager managed Damian Marley.
Okay.
So him and Zinger were close, and they say, yo, we're signing X-Clan and so on. So he passed it to the group. Stephen Marley was actually the person that kind of solidified that run, because he's older. Damian is younger, so he might not even know X-Clan. You know what I'm saying? I know he was in hip hop, but you know, our hip hop was, you know, a distinct kind of situation. So, so what happened was Damian Marley was coming to Cali. They wanted to give us the House of Blues at the time before the House of Blues shut down. And he was receiving the award. I think the, what was it called? The Vibe Award or something.
Okay.
So he was receiving the Vibe Award, and they had hired us for the night. And, you know, I live in the West now, so that place was packed, and we were just rocking like it was an X-Clan show. He was late. And for the fact that we held it down, he invited us for the rest of the tour. He fired everybody else and just put us on board. And then we ended up touring. And then after that, he invited me out to Florida to do Culture United, and we added it on to the album. You know what I'm saying? And we was originally supposed to go out with Wu-Tang.
Oh,
and,
man.
And that had got canceled. Someone had double booked in the Wu-Tang side, and they canceled it. So it was going to be Clash of the Clans. And then
Return
was going to be released. And that's how our album got leaked, because once that tour was canceled, the album started leaking because that MySpace thing was deep then. Remember how that MP3 and all that shit was?
Yeah, so yeah.
If you had anything going out to A&Rs at the time, people were just leaking anything that was hot to get all of those clicks on their pages and shit.
Yeah.
So so I added Tech N9ne and Damian Marley to the album. So they only had like whatever cuts we had. That's why the album was longer.
Yeah.
So the fact that Stephen Marley had cooked up the beat for us, and you know, I had one day to write that song out, man. And we hammered it, man. It was dope. But we never put a video or anything to it. We stayed touring so much with Suburban Noise, man. We never had time to really do a lot. But so it was always lucrative, you know.
So it was the independent label you was on that got you on the Insane Clown Posse tour?
Yes, yes. I toured with them, too. I toured with Tech. I ran in that circuit for at least 4 years, 4 years or more, 5 years.
And that's how Tech N9ne pretty much got on, was on their tour, right?
Yeah, because he was coming up at that time.
Yeah.
This is when he used to paint his face full out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, real deal. And big up to the Juggalos, man. They really held us down. It was a, you know, performing for the Juggalos, it's like Fight Club. You know what I'm saying? If they don't agree with you, man, you won't make it to the next show, man. They'll shut you down completely. And they held us down for a long time, man. You know, and that proves to people that, you know, my message is not a racist message and so on. It's about improvement. It's about empowerment, you know, for any person. You know, I am concerned about improving my people because we have such a bad stereotype throughout the world. So, you know, if I come representing and I got good music, man, what is there to hate on?
Yeah.
So they rock with us for all those years that we rocked in that circuit, man. I had a great time with them. It was better than being on a major, really. You know,
now there's some people that have issues with like some of the celebrations around the 50th anniversary of hip hop. Like, what's your opinion about that?
You know what? When I first started seeing it, my first question was, you know, who's celebrating the 50th? You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Because the craft has always existed in our neighborhoods. Is now, what are we saying? Happy 50th to all the companies that have made money for 50 years. You know, who are we really celebrating? Because even the artists were surprised, like, oh shit, it's 50 years, you know?
Yeah.
You know, what am I supposed to do? But then I stopped and I said, you know, what are we celebrating? And I didn't want to be a party pooper. So I said, if we're going to celebrate it like that, you know, even from my page, I started showing people that I was grateful coming into hip hop. If y'all in that frame of mind, I'm not gonna rub against the grain. But really, who are we celebrating, and how is it that the people who feel they have the right to indicate it's the 50th, how do you get to dictate who's on that stage? The people should say who should be on these stages.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You got Yankee Stadium and people coming out hollering their new single or whatever case may be. No, we don't have time for that. There's too many people to acknowledge. To be throwing in somebody who was bought in last minute or whatever case may be, you have to cut all of that foolishness and fluff off, you know? But again, I'm not in power like that. You know what I'm saying? So I didn't really have too much to say. All I did was, you know, if everybody's doing it like that, let me just show who I give a respect to. And I showed some pictures of people that, you know, throughout my travels that I've been with to say, celebrate this person. Don't forget about Cool Mo D. Don't forget about, you know, this person, that person. And not just old school people, some, you know, some newer school cats. You know what I'm saying? If it be a Method Man, if it be a Red Man, if it be whoever. Yep. Just celebrate the craft all the way around. Like how when I came up, there was no gangster rap. There was no conscious rap. There was no divisions. It was all hip hop. And we were all fighting for it to get put on. So we never got the victory. So it's hard to come back and say, hey, come back on the stage and celebrate the 50 if you never really paid us correctly. You never really took care of us. Yep. And this new generation, you just tossed in the bag. You know what I'm saying? It's almost like NBA. You know, these cats,
yeah.
The first year you score 30 points, you're getting $200 million or whatever. And you may be getting 10 times more paid than a Larry Bird, Dr.
And Michael Day. Jordan, all and all those cats. Yeah.
It took Jordan all these years just off shoes and thing to really be on a level of what a Jaylen Brown or Tatum is making combined. It might have took him years to grind for that. So we go through the same disrespect. So that, you know, and it was awkward, like the NBA 75. It was awkward. Like, How you put all of these people in, you leave out Tracy McGrady or Dwight Howard or whatever, and you feel like somebody from the 50s who played on a whole different grid is bred better than what today's player or just the, even that that golden era time frame.
Yeah,
they're not better than them.
Yeah, they only had like 8 teams back then, you know.
Correct. So, you know, people are trying to say don't forget about us, but you know, on the real. It, you know, that level of playing ball on that plane has to be separate some kind of way. Like, you got to just create its own category. So with hip hop, the same thing. Somebody rapping in the 70s, you definitely not dealing with nobody that's happening.
Like Nas or something, or Redman or Method Man, you know.
Correct. So you can't tell me Sugar Hill, yeah, you know, was the bomb. And you got all of these groups now who have taken that craft somewhere else. You create a different platform for that, so people don't get it twisted like it's all in the same box. So to me, it wasn't even divided correctly, bro.
Yeah. Now, how do you feel about modern day rappers, and is there anyone that stands out to you?
There's a lot of exceptional artists right now, man. You know, it's a technology now, so
yeah,
you know, so the young heads are kind of learning it differently now, how to place their words faster. You know, faster paces and tempos to lyrics, they're not basic anymore. So, you know, I'm impressed. You know, I've been impressed with Kendrick before all of this hype. You know what I'm saying? I was actually fighting some of these old school dudes who were stuck on, you know, this and that and this and that. And I'm like, you know, he went through a very powerful creative production house being with Dr. Dre.
Yep.
You don't really pass through there and don't get a certain level of skills. You know, or skill improvement.
You're right about that.
You feel what I'm saying? So I said that kid's gonna be something different. If he took somebody out of the backpacker side of LA, which is like the freestyle fellowship element, you know what I'm saying? He lives in Compton and all, but if you're not banging, you basically like a backpacker doing this hip hop. You know, that's what Ice Cube was, and then it just elevated to gangster because that's what the side of his rhyme book that they bought. But Ice Cube was just rapping just like anybody else. So for Kendrick, to me, you know what I'm saying? I don't know, you know, what people think or whatever, but this is what I analyze. You know what I'm saying? He's representing a whole different creativity of lyricism, because with gangster rap, you really just have to be basic and really just state your point. I'm here.
Yeah.
I blow it up, whatever. It didn't have to be as complex as what he's doing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I admired that. I admired that in Crooked Eye as well. Taking the syllable levels to another plane of lyricism where they just think about West Coast as one thing. You know, Medusa, Micah 9, you know, a lot of different artists from that side, Planet Asia. You know, Planet Asia rhymes so East Coast style that they think he's from the East. This nigga's out of Fresno, California. You know what I'm saying? And they don't even think about that side, that central part of the West. There's a lot of dope artists between there and the Bay. you know, and even further in the woods going up north, man. I've been out there a long time. So, you know, just on the West Coast side of things, but, you know, but just as a whole, I like a lot of new artists. And I like some of the old artists that still have it. You know what I'm saying? A lot of them don't. But, you know, to hear Redman now, you know, I see where he gets it more. You know what I'm saying? He's not on everybody's shit. You know what I'm saying? Where it used to be like it was exhausting. Like, oh, here, Redman again. And Redman again. But now it's rare. So when you hear it, it's like, oh, this is refreshing. Dog, you doing it like this now. You know what I'm saying? So I love to see that. I don't like how they do Buster. You know what I'm saying? You know, I don't like the fact that they use him like another commercial rag. You know, I spoke about this on another podcast about how when they say best lyricist and you don't mention those two dudes.
Yeah.
Because they've been on so much joints. You know what I'm saying? For everybody else, instead of their catalog, that people overlook their style and their growth. I felt De La Soul was overlooked. When they improved their style, you couldn't call them out of Long Island no more. Them dudes was rocking them breaks and creating memorable songs. You know, they get the musicality of it all, and the people weren't even on a level to appreciate that. You want them to go back and sing Potholes in My Lawn, and they got this new and improved, you know, banging material. You know, it's discouraging sometimes as a creative artist, bro. You know, so I don't know who's celebrating the 50. you know what I'm saying? Everybody's not celebrating it on the same chord. They're not going back to appreciate. They're waiting for how much material you're going to give us, and how much content, and how much people you got on your website, and are you still relevant? You know, that's not supposed to measure you.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? A lot of cats are going to sink by the wayside because the real lyricists are kind of secluded, you know, to themselves. So they're not being overly social and so on. So, you know, because where you pull it from is it doesn't take a lot of noise and hype, you know, for us to draw it and put it down on the pad. So you want that peace and that meditation. So when you come out, you got to flip a whole new script and say, hey, I'm here. Buy this for $10.99. Buy my t-shirt. Buy my this. You got to be a car salesman after being a priest, so to speak, of your craft. You know what I'm saying? So it's a real strange market to say celebrating the 50, and some people are just getting it. And, you know, sometimes it just takes time, you know, but for those that are exceptional, I feel they should have their own lane. And I think these labels need to stop being so mystery with, you know, what it takes to be successful, or at least admit that they don't even know. I think after COVID, nobody knows what's successful. Some of the most silly material is going over the top. You know what I'm saying? So I don't think anybody knows, you know, in celebrating a 50, what they're celebrating for, dog. And
you just made me think of something when you said something about like separating the lyricist from some of this other stuff. Some people have floated out there that we need like contemporary hip hop category. Do you agree with that?
What would that mean? You know,
I don't know, but I guess they're saying that like the artists from a certain era would fit in that category. Like, you know, rock stations, they got classic rock stations, but we don't really got classic hip hop stations.
Yeah, you know, I made this argument. I came here to New York to get a radio position, you know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. Because I wanted something to connect to the album coming, the documentary coming. I wanted to be present for a little while.
Yeah.
So I told them that I want to do something based on just conscious artists and roots reggae, because I don't hear it in rotation. So what I was offering is basically a missing enzyme to what's happening, because everything is so popped and bought out. You don't have anybody spinning just off, this is dope and it's clean and it's inspirational.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I've tried everything as far as going through inspirational brands. I got refused because when I come, they don't understand. And I'm saying, well, inspirational is not gospel. Gospel doesn't own the inspirational brand. If I get out with a Buddha priest drum or some shit, you know, that can be inspirational to some. You don't judge people who do new age music like that. So why would you judge me bringing conscious music to you or conscious hip hop? So I had to realize there's not even a category for what we do. You know, you think about
yeah.
it.
How,
where would you place Black Thought? Where would you place Common? The only reason you say Common is because he's an actor, so he crosses over to a pop field.
Yeah.
But if he just put an album out by himself and it wasn't jazzy and it was just breaks and so on, where would you put him? You wouldn't put him next to Sexy Red. You wouldn't put him next to Cardi B.
Hell no.
What category would he put in? You just give him Lyricist of the Year behind the curtain and tell him go home and be proud you got another Grammy? There's nowhere for us to even have a category. And I think that's the biggest disrespect. So even when I came here, what would my radio show be called? I can't say Conscious Powers because people cringe at peace. It's like if you try to feed them something good, it's like, hey, man, this is a vegan burger or whatever. I'd rather have the such and such. You know, they cringe instantly.
Yeah.
You know, it's bad that peace is cringeworthy, and that doesn't make sense to me. And I don't want to try to drill, you know, tell people to invest in what I'm doing or invest in this show or whatever, and you're not really with it. You got to want decency at this point. All right? You got to want decency.
Yeah.
If you want the top hip hop right now to be stripper worthy, you know what I'm saying? And that's in its own world. In regular hip hop, it doesn't work.
Yeah. You know what
I'm saying? Or it didn't work. Lauryn Hill didn't have to take her clothes off. MC Light didn't have to take her clothes off. Queen Latifah,
yeah. So Bahamadia, whoever, yes, yeah.
Somebody somewhere along the line that broke, but you know, and we can't argue too far because all of those people that we named went to film, TV, and so on to add to their careers. It wasn't hip hop that made them. All right. The only cast that we had that really took hip hop to the level of maybe like a Jay-Z or a Nas, who they just straight records every year, bangers, every summer, claiming the summer with a single for like 10 years. You know, that's like LeBron getting to the finals every year. Those dudes were in the finals every year until a point where the tempo of what they rhymed on became irrelevant.
Yeah.
All right? Just a breakbeat tempo is played out to them. Everything sounds the same. It's the same drum tempo. If I'm a DJ, I don't even have to mix. I can just put the next record on and the next record on. When they play DJ Mustard's category of the best top 10, I don't even think he had to change the tempo on the record to blend it. It was just one song, and the same. Dun, 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 everything was that.
Yeah.
Now who in you know, do you know from the 90s that's rhyming to? Dun, 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 dun. Nobody's rhyming to that, dog. You know what I'm saying? So it took a genius lyricist to find the pockets on that. And I'm not saying that those cats from the 90s couldn't do it. But in the real mind, we ain't messing with that. You know what I'm saying? Not no boom bap cats is messing with that.
Yeah.
So it's one thing to adjust to the new times, but it's one thing for these production companies to be at war trying to set the tempo. That's what the trap is about. Trap is just drum and bass.
Yeah.
So instead of saying urban drum and bass, you made it say just take trap. And then they had a fight and said, well, we're not killing people. I'm just talking about girls and whatever. So they say drill now, and this is trap. Look at all the subdivisions that are being created. So I said, why can't we have a category for conscious artists? This is the biggest war right now. You know what I'm saying? I'm in the waiting room right now to see if that's going to be an acceptable idea. And I think it's a niche idea in the midst of all this foolishness, bro. I'm being 100 on here, and I don't really talk my business. If something is pending, I don't talk.
Yeah.
But the fact that you have a platform is best for me to kick this information, dog, because it's going to take the people to support something like that. I can't do it by myself. I'm going to have to call other conscious artists in and say, yo, Black Thought, Lauren, I need you. You know, the most respected and then the ones that are up and coming are going to have to get their catalogs together, bro. It's no longer about just yelling at the beat. You got to make a dope song, man. Okay, where would Black Thought be right now if he just rapped to the beat and didn't know how to make songs and compose and work with the band and all of that kind of thing? They got to do that.
Yeah.
They're skipping the music knowledge that they have to go further into the industry. There's just certain things that you have to have. I learned that in the West. I went out there to learn engineering. I went out there to start learning instruments, what it's like to have a band, to how to increase my tracks, to get out of sampling and make my own funk. And that's what my projects have been, examples of the different producers. You know, they're going to see in the documentary when I start talking about the people that I have put out music with. You know, they're behind because we were on an independent. It wasn't pushed like Polygram, Polydor Records, and all the stuff that I was on back in the days. But still, I'm touring more than Island ever gave me with this brand in the first 2 years. The independent market was strong. It's something I learned in the West. It's not strong out here in the East Coast.
Yeah, West Coast is definitely, I mean, you got Texas out that way. Their independent scene is crazy. California is definitely crazy with it. Let me ask you this. What was your reaction to Drake suing UMG over this Kendrick song?
I think it was, I'm not judging this battle between the two men. I'm judging it between the production houses.
Yeah.
Because when you get $300 million, it's like a ball player. It's not $300 million in your pocket.
Yeah.
It's $300 million for your production crew, who runs the lights, who runs the road, so on and so on. So I'm looking at if someone at that level is pointing out that the Siri is mixing it up, play Drake and you're playing Kendrick. You know what I'm saying? That can be the type of thing that we all have to pay attention to. Somebody may be calling another artist's name and you're playing. You might say, play me some Ghostface, and they play Action Bronson.
Okay. Yeah.
You feel me? or what's the dude who was copying Future? Who came out with the one record?
I forgot who that was.
I forgot that guy's name. He was real loud, but he sounded exactly like Future. So you may... what was it called? Phantom? Oh, damn it. I can't remember the name of this song. But when I heard it, I said, damn, I said, that sound like Future. That sound a little different. It sound like Zesty, like he's younger or something. And he's like, nah, this is such and such. And then I said, wow. I said, this is almost like a straight clone of this dude. Like even the Action Bronson thing, I thought it was Ghostface. I could have swore it was Ghostface, though.
Yeah.
You feel what I'm saying? I could have swore it was. But, you know, but the audience of today is not going to, you know, break it down to say.
Yeah, they don't really care about that.
They don't care about that, dog. They don't care about that, dog. So I'm saying in the era of clones, man, we got to, you know, and I'm not dissing their artistry or nothing. You might have the same vocal texture or whatever as them, but I'm just saying it for you to put out music and people mistake you for somebody else. You got to call
out. It's too similar. Yeah, it's too similar.
It's too similar. And then when you're saying, oh, there's a bug in the Siri that everybody's saying, hey, play this. Hey, play this. You may be getting 100,000 clicks that ain't yours. So there might be some sense in this. There might be some whistleblower in that.
Oh, so they were saying there was a bug in the Siri where it was, you would say play Drake and it would play Kendrick?
Yeah, because the song is so popular and it has his... Yeah, so that's what I got from it when I saw the MP3. I said, well, damn, you pointing out some real deep shit. Like the AI can do a glitch and just be like, popular, because it's a Drake diss. So whatever the key words of the algorithm are,
yeah,
you can mistake that. So if you're pointing that out to us, how many times has that happened before?
Yeah.
And
AI does make a lot of mistakes. I will say that.
Yes, it does, bro. So if you're teaching us something, don't let the internet drown us in y'all little battle like, oh, you lost and you had to sue this dude. Well, you have to sue him. You already rich.
But on the other side of that, though, somebody can go in and write some codes and algorithms where it's automatically going to play Kendrick when you say play Drake.
Dang. And that's what I thought he was saying.
Yeah.
So I said, wow.
I didn't know it went that deep. And
yeah, because now you're pointing out something that, like back in the days with Billboard, when people were getting all the triangles and the circles indicating gold and platinum and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. You know,
somebody creates that.
Yeah.
So you're telling us the people who created this stream thing, they have a way to say, I can get you another 1 million and 2 million hits.
Yeah.
To where I can just write this in the code right now, put practice, and it'll play every time somebody says, play Drake. Because sometimes when you do the little Spotify or whatever, they play cousins to the songs that you like.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, why did you put this in my bowl? But you have to note the key words.
Yeah.
Who's writing the code? I thought that's what he was talking about.
Yeah. And every algorithm's written up. All the algorithms are basically codes anyways.
Correct. Even AI is posted by prompt.
Yeah.
So if you give the right prompt words, you know what I'm saying? It'll give you what you're looking for or the cousin to what you're looking for. Yeah. So imagine somebody getting the Drake song and the next thing come on, beep, boat, dun, 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 because it's associated with it.
That's crazy.
That's crazy as fuck. So I thought when he was talking about that, I said, wow, that's a very interesting thing, but it'll get buried in everybody sitting around like, you mad because he lost the battle.
Yeah.
Battle. Come on, man. You got to think above this. This money is not about y'all. When somebody's giving out all this $300 million, man, that's not his money.
Yeah.
Even when you get a basic record deal, dog, that's not your money. You got to finish that project or projects that are due for that bread. So if he's saying somebody's getting in my way and your computer that rotates us all this time, y'all been singing Drake for 10, 15 years, that computer's been serving him and then all of a sudden it's been altered? What would the reason be? Because he's not even getting an even play. I'm sure all of Canada supports this man and it's not even registering that he's even in the battle. You got so stomped.
Yeah.
That don't make no sense, dog.
I just interviewed Chai Claire last Friday, and he said all of Canada really pretty much backs Drake still.
All the way out, dog. Come on, they beat up Rick Ross when he came up there. Come on. They ain't playing. When has anybody ever represented Canada as a rally?
Especially at that level.
At that level. You put it, you know, you're one of those.
Yeah.
No matter what they say about this kid Drake, you've been running it for a long time. No. You got the private jets, you got the team ownerships, and you got all of the history that a Kanye has, that a Birdman has, and all of this other shit. So all of a sudden they tied.
Claire said, "What do you say?" He said Drake's as big as Celine Dion out there.
Yes, and that's big. Okay,
that's big. That's
you
huge.
Got country behind you. These dudes got states. Cities and the block behind them, and you got something to say about this dude. I just hate
and a
the
local
way
rapper goes. Can't even get a city behind him, and Drake got a whole country behind him.
A whole country, dog. And that's to me like, come on, man, cut it out. You know what I'm saying? I think that everyone is just tired of the tradition.
Yeah.
You know, of every time you come out, you expect to be on top. And now somebody had enough nerve to say, nah, man, I'm not having it. So okay to the little battle of it, but to a point where you flushing the whole career down and y'all start doing hate shit and calling this man out his name and calling him pedophile and all that. The song is saying that. How would you go to the Super Bowl, sing that song, and everybody singing and calling you a pedophile? That's crazy as hell. You gotta stand up. So you'd be a stupid dude not to say something to stop that. Like, censor your shit, stop calling me out, or I'm going to put you on blast because you're defaming me in front of the world. Already you dogged me with the number one record. They say, well, damn, who is he dissing? He's dissing Drake. Oh, shit, Drake deals with minors and such and such and such and whoop-de-whoop. Come on, dog.
Yeah, if that's not true, that's something you definitely can't just let people run with.
Correct. So if there was no facts on that, if he's not sitting in a Diddy situation or whatever, dog, it's gone beyond the battle rap in the back of the yard. If y'all was on King of the Dot and you kicked that, that's different. You know what I'm saying? You in a battle rap type of situation and he cold diss you from top to toe and call your mama out of name or whatever. That's y'all battle for that moment. And people who in that league understand. But you just made a world hit that is on such a deep rotation. And then you're going to point out like, yo, the algorithm is even tripping. Every time I say Drake, you play my song and then that comes on. Like Us comes on and then this one plays and then it comes back. Yo, man, what the hell is going on? hey, if you got people with money, you investigate. I'm sure he wouldn't sue if he didn't have no evidence.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to have something going, and you can't just say, hey, I think that you're going whatever. Nah, man, it's too much money at stake. And if that's happening, he can never get back on his feet, good brother.
Yeah.
Never. If the technology is against you and the people is fronting on you, you'll never get back in the game.
Damn, that's crazy. That's crazy. Can we expect some new music from you in the future?
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, man. I'm out here recording right now.
Okay.
So, I definitely have something solid. It's funny that as soon as I got to Brooklyn, I felt to create something new. Our album is not scheduled till next year. So we're still okay. Doing instruments and stuff on a 35th X-Clan album. But I said, I just wanted to do something with some good breaks. And I called my producers, told them, send me some joints. And I started writing, man. And I've been talking to a few brands out here that do have the level where they can push that brand of X-Clan. And we should be hearing something very shortly.
That's what's up. I do live music reviews on Saturday. So whenever you do put something out, definitely love to review it on the show.
Oh, man, I would love that. I would love to hear your critique, man.
Yep. Well, before I let you go, man, anybody you want to shout out?
Oh, my list is always too long, man. I just would say much respect to my family, my children. Giving thanks to the creator, man, to still be here and have the ability, man. Doing this documentary has been so heavy. Just touching back to old soldiers and family, man. I'm grateful. You know what I'm saying? So I just want to put it out there to the world. I look forward to y'all really just, you know, connecting to the deeper side of the family as I give tribute to some of my soldiers that are here and some of them that are gone, man. So that's what I like to wrap my side up with.
Well, I appreciate you coming back on. I guess we could call this part two. I'm going to basically clip, you know, put a commercial in the middle where it kind of went out, man. And you definitely bring in more credibility to the show, man. That's for sure.
Oh, man. Thank you for having me, good brother. And much success. Continued success.
Appreciate it. You're a friend of the show. So, you know, I'm going to support everything you're doing. If you need something, just hit me up, man.
I will, big brother. Thank you, man.
I enjoy the rest of your night, man.
Same to you. Peace and blessings.
All right. Peace.
All right, one.
Well, there we have it. Brother Jay, X-Clan, definitely a legend in hip-hop. A lot of interesting things he said there, especially about the Drake thing, man. I didn't know that Desiree was really going against Drake. Drake might actually have something really credible in his lawsuit. I still think it's kind of crazy to sue somebody over a battle rap song, but it is what it is, man. But once again, thank you for tuning in to another episode. Live from Vietnam, the one and only Paul Masson. That was Brother Jay from X-Clan. Got new music coming out, he said, next year. And definitely can't wait to review it on our Saturday reviews. Thank y'all for tuning in. Peace, and I'm out.